Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshall, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at @YPSport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
As mentioned earlier in the intro, this week we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshall. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
Morning. Okay, so firstly, let's start in the Premier League, where following their poor 4-1 defeat at home to Tottenham Hotspur, Leeds United's stay in the top flight came to an end. I think it's fair to say that this season is one that fans will not look back at fondly. And considering the obvious strength of teams in the Championship next season, what are some of the big tasks that they will have to overcome to make sure that they have a better season compared to this one, Stuart?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, they need to work out who they are and who's running them. You know, most of all, I mean, we're not sure about the chairmanship of the club. Obviously, the director of football left a few weeks ago, and there's no manager either. So, you know, between filling those three posts, if indeed the chairmanship does change hands, then they've got to sort of work out an identity. I mean, it's one of these buzzwords in football, but Leeds have kind of gone away from most of the best aspects of that team that Marcelo Bielsa built, you know, over the course of this season. Luke Ayling was talking after the West Ham game about how they've sort of lost that intensity and that physical style. I think that's as much about confidence as anything else. Certainly under Javi Gracia, that was kind of a deliberate policy to sit back a bit and bring teams on them. I don't think you can do that as an Elland Road team, because Leon and I have talked many times about as a Leeds United team, because Leon and I have talked many times about how important Elland Road is and those supporters are. And I think you've got to play in a way that brings them into the game. And that's something that, you know, even for the faults of the Jesse Marsh team, that was something they at least tried to do. That was certainly something the Bielsa team tried to do. So I think the next manager's got to play in a way that does that. You know, you don't want someone like who, with the greatest respect, a very good manager, but, you know, Russell Martin's gone to Swansea. From Swansea to Southampton, plays a very patient style of football. You don't really want that. You want an intense brand of football. I think you want to sort of get back to the Bielsa way of doing it, as opposed to the Marsh way of doing it, where it's a bit more about quick passing rather than sort of directness and keeping your fingers crossed. You know, they probably need to rely a bit more on the youth system that Orta and others have spent the last couple of years building up. You know, partly for financial realities, but also I just think that's a good thing to do as a club, help sort of strengthen that identity and just really get back to what they were under Bielsa. You know, it's not about even being winning the championship and that sort of thing. First and foremost, it's just about having a way of doing things that fans can relate to, and then hopefully everything flows from there. Because, you know, the way it finished this season, I mean, the way they lost to Tottenham Hotspur, and the way they collapsed against West Ham, the way they caved in against Palace and Liverpool earlier in the season, was really the antithesis of Leeds. It was so feeble and so weak, and so, you know, almost accepting of their fate, that Leeds just can't be like that. That's not the sort of football club they are, and it just can't be how they are going forward.
They've got a hell of a lot of work to do, haven't they? You saw the
think about it. Was the first thing Madvezani's come out, he's made an apology and spoke of, you know, rebuild, making the right decisions. And that's fair enough as a starting base, isn't it? But the lead, you know, the Leeds supporters, you know, dreadful. Dreadful two seasons, really, isn't it? I know there was the joy of the final day of the previous season against Brentford, but that was really sort of tempered with a massive amount of relief, really, wasn't it? I mean, it was a poor season. You sort of look at it, you know. I remember when they brought Bielsa in. What was it now, nearly 5 years ago, isn't it? They got him in by, I think it was about the middle of June, wasn't it? And he sort of got started, hit the ground running, got everything right in pre-season, getting his ideology across. And, you know, the clock's ticking with Leeds. There's a lot of players who will leave in the aftermath of relegation. You know, you have to wait and see who fancies it. Quite a few have been pretty scarred, haven't they? You know, the likes of Aronson and Rocker. A few others as well. You'd imagine Rodrigo won't particularly fancy it. Maybe Sinisterra, Gonto as well. So, I mean, ideally Leeds will, they'll want market value, but they might have to be a little bit pragmatic with some of them, and, you know, into getting them shifted to bring other people in, really. And overall, getting the ownership sorted out with, obviously, Radzivani and the American group there. Massively needs clarity there. And the supporters just need some hope again, don't they, really? You know, someone, a managerial figure to rally around. They had that in Bielsa. He was given the time to come in with his pre-season work, see who he wanted, assess the players. So, yeah, June's usually a very quiet time in the off-season for a lot of clubs, but I think it's just going to be so pivotal for Leeds United going forward. You know, you just hope that there's obviously, going in final third of the season, was always a decent chance that Leeds would finish in the bottom for everyone. He obviously hoped they didn't, but you just hope there's some sort of contingency plans that have been partway down the line to sort of just sort out the mess, basically. That's the sort of bottom line, really, isn't it? And at the very least, the supporters deserve, after, you know, tremendous backing as always last season, previous season, they just want some optimism.
Yeah, and you know, the word you used, that when you use the C word, that was the big one: clarity. They need clarity. Yeah. They can't have this situation that they've had this season, where you've got Radrizzani running the club, but he's having to run everything by the 49ers. You know, now that Radrizzani's bought Sampdoria, there's a heck of a lot of work I'm sure he'll have to do to turn that club around. I'm not sure he can do all the work that both clubs need at the same time, so he's probably going to hand it over. But they just need to know how the club's going to be run. The players and the fans need to know how they're going to play, you know. And it's just all got to come from there. And then if they do have a director of football, he's obviously got to be tuned in. If they're going to go down a slightly different route, again, people just need to know what it is. It's just about having that clarity first and foremost, because it's hard to fully get behind something when you don't really know what it is. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that sort of summed it up for me in the season just gone, in terms of the mess of the decision making, was Jack Harrison on deadline day, when you've got him sent to Leicester City by a manager who said he wanted to keep him because time's ticking and half of the board are working on American time and are fast asleep on the other side of the Atlantic. And you've got this farcical situation where he's sent to Leicester while they make up their mind whether they want to sell him or not. And you just can't have that fuzziness. You know, under Bielsa, things were very clear. Bielsa knew what he wanted, and everyone else, frankly, was so scared of him that they made sure he got it and believed in him as well. Of course, that was the big thing. And it doesn't have to be the manager who dictates it. It doesn't have to be the director of football. It doesn't have to be the chairman. But between them, they have to know which way they're going, and they have to go down. And I think they've got to go through that thought process first. I think, in all honesty, whilst I wouldn't keep Allardyce on as manager, I think he should be important to that process, because I think you know, what he knows about English football and what he's seen about Leeds United should go a long way to informing the decisions they make. Because, you know, without a director of football and without that football expertise, they need somebody who's been on the inside to just say, look, this is where you're going wrong. This is what you need to do. So they really need to sort of get the money's worth out of him in the next week or so, just pumping him for ideas and, you know, getting the information on where things have gone wrong, because you can see things from the outside, but obviously from the inside, it's much clearer. Because, you know, for example, we talked about that lack of intensity. Well, I it could be that that comes from lack of physical fitness, but I very much doubt it does, to be honest with you, with the way Leeds have worked over the last couple of years. I think it's probably more mental, but that's me looking from the outside. Allardyce, with all the stats and all the experts around him, will be able to tell them, look, you need to do more work on psychology, or you need to improve your fitness, or change the training in this sort of way, whatever it is. They need to tap into that.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Stuart said there. I mean, a massive amount of experience. Ultimately, he came in, you know, everyone sort of thought it might be a bit too late, and so it's proved. But, you know, as long as he's dug out experience, massive amount of experience in terms of how football clubs run, you know, in terms of departments, he gets a bit of a bad press. So he always has done, Sam Allardyce, about his, you know, his old school perceived tactics, but he's always, the people in the know, I realised that he was, you know, he was always one of the biggest forward thinkers, really, in terms of, you know, Stuart's touched on the scientific aspect of football, espousing certain things and the psychology. He's always been extremely big on that, and he's seen many different sorts of football clubs, how they run, what works and what doesn't. A little bit similar with Neil Warnock and Huddersfield. You know, I suppose the parting gift, if you like, would be to just, you know, a final sort of report on all aspects of the club. I mean, they can obviously compare it with the various clubs they've been at. And, you know, Leeds massively in need of someone. You know, he's a bit of an outsider as well. He's not particularly cosy with all of them. And he'll, you know, say as he sees it, and he'll give objective opinions. And, you know, there's such a lot of work, as Stuart's touched upon there, clarity needed in a hell of a lot of areas. And they could do a lot worse than listen to what Allardyce says.
I mean, you know, there's clearly things that were very right at Leeds. I mean, you know, I watched them beat Chelsea 3-0 in August, and granted, what's happened to Chelsea since has sort of put that in a bit of perspective. But nevertheless, you know, we saw them win at Anfield. There's clearly, you know, there was clearly ability there, but the way it unravelled, you know, really from 45 minutes in against Crystal Palace was really alarming, and that points to, you know, bigger problems and bigger issues below the surface that, say, nobody on the outside is probably fully aware of, but they really, really need to be addressed. Because, you know, we've seen over the course of the season how it's undermined, you know, the good things that are at that football club. You know, they shouldn't, from all the foundations that were in the first half of the season, they should have been able to turn things around and avoid relegation. And instead, they've got worse, and they've got worse really by just making bad decision after bad decision, you know, wasting £35 million on a player for the future when they needed somebody for the present, you know, bad decisions on managers and going after managers who they were never going to get. And you know, as Leon alluded to, bringing in Allardyce so late in the day that he wasn't ever realistically going to be able to do anything in four games. And in all honesty, it wasn't four games anyway. It was three, because number one was Man City. And all of these, you know, the distractions of, you know, boardroom machinations and all of these sort of things have really just undermined what was, you know, a couple of years ago, a really, really good starting point for a football club. And they shouldn't have to be building again at this stage when you look at it from that standpoint, but that is the reality now.
I mean, the problem, I think, as well, if they don't get all the ducks in a row, and it's a difficult summer, you know, it's not that long a period in time before the, you know, the championship stuff starts again. It's only really a couple of months, isn't it? Mm. And if you you sort of factor in pre-season, they'll be coming back at the end of June, and you know, you hope for Leeds to say they can find that clarity and optimism. But if they don't, you know, there's a danger for me. The start of the season could start it poorly. Teams will be fancying trying to turn Leeds over early season, and then, you know, if it's a difficult start, that fits into the narrative. Supporters get disgruntled. There's a big hangover effect, and all of a sudden it becomes a really another problematic season, doesn't it? And things can be compounded. So time massively of the essence for me.
Yeah, as you say, it's about setting a positive tone as much as anything, because you talk quite rightly about sort of working out which players are going to want to stay and which are going to want to go. There'll be some on the fence, and a bad start will push them into our want to leave territory, perhaps in some cases ones that you want. But you know, on the positive side, it's not all doom and gloom for Leeds. One, as I sort of alluded to earlier, one aspect of the club that has been quite good is that they have accumulated a lot of very good under 23 players who perhaps would have struggled to go directly into the Championship, but having had loan spells and what have you, might be ready to have an impact on the Championship. They will need some experience bringing in around them, but I think, you know, with the likes of Joe Gellhart and Charlie Cresswell and lots more players like that, players like Lewis Bate, you would hope that there is actually players in place already who could, if not become the core of the team, become a big part of the squad. And you know, if that were to happen, then, you know, maybe a few years down the line, people might look a little bit more kindly about the work Victor Orta did, because I think he did do some very bad work. I've already alluded to Jorginho Rutter, but I think he did do some good work as well, and hopefully that will come to fruition in years to come.
And now for this week, we turn to the League One playoff final, which saw jubilation for Sheffield Wednesday and heartache for their South Yorkshire rivals Barnsley. The game saw the Tykes going down to 10 men in the 49th minute after Adam Phillips was shown a straight red card following a challenge on Lee Gregory, as well as having a penalty appeal waved away. The Owls had to wait until the very end of extra time before Josh Windass performed a perfectly timed diving header to send Sheffield Wednesday to the Championship. Now, what did you both make of the performances from the team, seeing as you were both there? And what do both sides have to do so that Barnsley can possibly go one step further and for Sheffield Wednesday to survive in the Championship, which, as we alluded to earlier, will be incredibly, incredibly challenging, Leon?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you've got to say congratulations to Sheffield Wednesday, as tough as it was for Barnsley. I mean, we've seen some, myself and Stuart, you know, following football, we've seen some dramatic denouements, and that was right up there, wasn't it? You know, it was destined for penalties, and Barnsley's heart's, you know, broken. So it just felt, sort of thinking about it now, maybe written in the stars for Sheffield Wednesday a little bit. Obviously, Stuart did the game. Peterborough, the most remarkable sort of playoff semi-final that I can remember. You know, incredible stuff. And obviously the final as well. I mean, you'll struggle to beat a more dramatic finale than that. But yeah, I mean, it can only be human. It was so cruel on Barnsley, and they deserve penalties. I mean, it was, when we go into the, you know, the main decisions on the day, and there were a few, and it was disappointing in one respect that VAR and technology and this and that played such a huge part on what is a huge game of football. Obviously, we have memories of Huddersfield's game against Forest last year. That was mired in controversy as well. And I felt for Barnsley in the respect of, I thought they should have had a penalty just after half-time when Lee Gregory looked a clumsy challenge on Liam Kitchen. I sort of watched, I thought it was a penalty in real time, and I sort of watched it again, and it confirmed that. I don't know what Stuart thinks. The sending off, I did think it was a sending off, and obviously when it went to VAR, unless it's a sort of clear and obvious error, they're probably going to stick with it. I thought it was, and all the replays, you see the replays, he didn't sort of fly in and catch him a particular, but the way he flew in with both feet off the ground, it looked reckless. He wasn't in control for me. You did feel for him on the occasion, with it being a, you know, playoff final, huge game of football. But, I could see why that was given. But the actual non-penalty, I was scratching my head at that.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, I'll be honest, I've never been a fan of VAR, but it just frustrates me that we spend so much money on it, and it really doesn't seem to bring much clarity, much improvement in the decision making at all. And it's not just the money. You forget that on a normal weekend, the VAR take two referees away from the Football League as well, and that has a knock-on effect in terms of the quality of the officiating, which, you know, the lower you go down the pyramids is pretty woeful. But no, I agree with Leon. I thought it was a penalty. I thought it was a red card. But I mean, in terms of the bigger picture, I think you've got to pay huge credit to Sheffield Wednesday, because from a long time out, I was very concerned that whoever finished third out of Plymouth, Ipswich and Sheffield Wednesday would struggle to lift themselves, for the playoffs. It's kind of one of those truisms that some of us cling to, that it's, you know, it's the most difficult way to go into that contest. And then to have been 4-0 down in the semi-final and to have got it back to 4-4 in aggregate in the second leg and then gone behind again and then won on penalties, you know, they really did show a lot of mental resolve. I don't think the football at Wembley was particularly great. And, you know, I do think Barnsley were as dangerous as they were when it was 10 against 11. But that mental resolve to get the job done, that is huge credit to Darren Moore, to Tom Bates, the sports psychologist, to the backroom staff and to the players themselves. And, you know, I think when you take the identities of the teams out of it, I think it's always better, really, if the team that finishes highest in the league is the one that goes up. And Sheffield Wednesday did finish 10 points ahead of Barnsley, so it's kind of good in that respect. But you couldn't but help the feel for Barnsley, you know, the way it panned out. As Leon said, the penalties was just what they deserved. You wouldn't necessarily say either team deserved to win over the 120 minutes, but you would certainly say they both deserve the chance to have a shootout to decide it.
I actually thought on the day, and looking back, that the biggest moment, I mean, there were some big moments in it ultimately, not so much in the first half, which was obviously cage up. I think the biggest moment in it personally was the Luke O'Connell miss in the first period of extra time. And obviously we can talk about the effect of Felix getting sent off, this and that, but as Stuart, you know, rightly said, Barnsley played a better side in the second half of the game with a man disadvantaged. So as tough as it was, it didn't overly affect Barnsley. I thought they made a very good substitution when Norwood came on. He was dropping back. I thought he did really well, James Norwood, when he came on. And they were the better side for me. But that, when you've got 10 men, you're going into extra time. Imagine Michael was thinking, if we can just get one if not two chances. But they got a huge chance in the context of that game. If they'd have scored that, it'd have really piled the pressure on Sheffield Wednesday. Barnsley would obviously drop back to protect what they've got. But I personally thought that was the biggest moment, aside from what happened at the end. That was the huge moment in that game for me.
Absolutely. Well, I think just generally in life, you can complain about. You can complain about referees, you can complain about other factors, and so on and so forth, if you do your job. And you know, in every other respect, Barnsley did their job. You know, they did really well in the midfield when they were a man light. You know, Harry Ayres, we saw Mads Andersen make a goal line clearance. Yeah. You know, we saw some really big blocks. But that was their moment, as Leon says. You know, a breakaway, a counter-attack set up for them. And it's harsh to pick on Luca Cannell, because he's had a really good season. But that is the reality. You know, when the games are that tight, they're decided by, you know, these decisive moments. And he failed to take his. And then Josh Windass, who frankly, by his own admission, had a really poor 120 minutes, comes up with an absolutely brilliant diving header after great work by Lee Gregory. And that's what's, you know, a whole season of work has come down to a couple of moments like that. And that's the brilliance, but also the cruelness of football. And, you know, you talk about the cruelness. I guess the thing for Barnsley now is to not let that affect them, for there not to be a hangover, and for Sheffield Wednesday to sort of look at it and say, look, we scraped through here. You know, we're only just a Championship side. We've got to really look hard about where we can improve on our weaknesses and get things together, because as Leon says, it's going to be a really, really competitive division next season.
Yeah, I mean, I think from Barnes' perspective, obviously a hell of a lot of hurt, and it'll last for a few days, yeah. But when the dust settles, it's been a season of massive progress, even accounting for what happened at the end, cruel as it was. They show that they're going to lose one or two players. I think you can imagine that Mads Andersen is going to get into the final 12 months of his contract, maybe one or two others. You know, you look at Brad Collins, has been out on the scene. There's the Callum Styles factor. He's obviously come back from his loan now, still a saleable asset. I think they're going to lose two or three big hitters maybe, but they've still got a real strong nucleus there, and if they can sort of recruit smartly. And, you know, Michael Duff deserves that, doesn't he? He'll need picking up now. He's done a brilliant job. How are Barnsley going to go again? You know, this is what we're going to do. And, you know, a bit of build on that and show optimism. I mean, looking at League One, there's obviously there'll be some tough club, Derby County for one. But, you know, you've got two clubs out of there in Sheffield Wednesday and Ipswich, huge clubs who are all, you know, you fancied them to be right up at the top there. It might be marginally easier next season and present opportunity to Barnsley to, you know, to get the recruitment on point to hopefully avoid the playoffs and finishing the top two. There'll certainly be a club that other teams in the division fear, or that they should do.
Yeah, I mean, if they can keep Michael Duff, they'll have a big advantage over the rest, because, you know, you mentioned Derby. Well, Paul Warren's going to be having his first pre-season. You know, Wigan and Blackpool, I'm sure, will be dangerous, but they'll be starting again. Barnsley should be able to hit the ground running, because even though, as Leon says, they will lose players, you know, and they will have new players to integrate, that's just inevitable. The methods will all be ingrained, and they should be able to start next season quicker than they did the last, because it took a bit of bedding in. So hopefully they can use that to their advantage. And even if they were to lose Duff, to kind of keep a level of continuity in terms of how they were to replace him and how they go about things. I think that's the thing for all clubs, frankly. At times like this, you are going to lose key individuals, but if you can keep the whole theme going and not have this starting again process that we're talking about at Leeds, then you're so much stronger for it. And obviously that's the basis that Sheffield Wednesday have. I think in their case, you know, they've got quite an experienced squad. They probably just need a bit of freshness and a bit of vitality adding to it. I think the positive for them is, I think Darren Moore's shown in the past that he's very good at tapping into the loan market for young players, and it, you know, he knows where to find these players. And if they can make three or four really loan signings, you know, along the lines of the ones that were made across the city this season, in players like James McAtee and Tommy Doyle from Manchester City, if they can add a few players like that to the core, then Sheffield Wednesday should be looking at the season Sunderland have just had and thinking, well, why can't we be that ambitious next season? You know, maybe not, I say, probably not make the playoffs. They don't want to get too far ahead of themselves, but certainly a top half finish is something they should be aiming for with some shrewd additions to that squad.
Yeah, you sort of look at Wednesday. I mean, a lot of people are saying there is a short turnaround between the, you know, winning promotion in the playoffs to obviously going into pre-season and starting again. But he did make a point, Darren Moore, after the game. Speaking about, they had two contingency plans, and they were down the line with, you know, plan A and plan B, and being sort of proactive as well. And they've got the momentum from a remarkable end to the season. You know, considering where they were as well. You know, they had a poor run in the final third of the season. They've got their act together. They've finished. You look, you know, with some real momentum there. There's players who've got sort of unfinished business with the Championship. Players who really want to make the mark there. You know, the likes of Michael Smith for one, Mike and Kirby, you know, as well. They joined Sheffield Wednesday with an eye on promotion, but also an eye on, you know, showing the wares in the Championship. But being the type of club Sheffield Wednesday are, they will recruit good quality players. You know, in terms of what they'll be offering, in terms of the budget and the stature of the club, they'll have no problem recruiting good Championship ready players, and that's the big advantage they've got in the round.
Yeah, and let's be honest, there'll be a lot of Championship players and lower end Premier League players who were watching that game on Wednesday, seeing the atmosphere those 44,000 fans generated. And thinking, I want to be a part of that. And there'll probably be even more who saw the semi-final, you know, second leg, and thinking, I want nights like that at Hillsborough. So those two games have been a really good advert for Sheffield Wednesday in terms of recruitment, because those atmospheres the supporters generated, that's exactly what you want to be involved in as an ambitious footballer. So that in itself, never mind the sort of the name and the history and the stature of the club, should give them a leg up if they get in a tight battle to recruit player X or player Y this summer.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wobshall, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com. Or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening. Look after yourselves, and bye for now.